Hey everybody, my name's David Thompson. I'm the CTO of the Sprightly Institute, and today I'd like to talk about minimalist web application deployment using Scheme, a language that I know many, at least some familiar faces in the room, quite familiar with. Quickly about me, again, I'm Dave, I'm the CTO of the Sprightly Institute, and Sprightly is a 501c3 US-based nonprofit, and our mission is to build technology that makes secure distributed programming easy. I'm going to talk a little bit about the deployment of such technology, but in this room, if you stick around for the entire time, you're going to see many other talks that get into all of the facets of Sprightly technology, so I highly recommend you stick around. But in this talk, we're going to talk about web applications. We're going to cover a number of topics. We're going to start with the topic of scale and what does that mean, scaling up, scaling down, the problems that I see with mainstream web development. Oh, and I didn't start my timer. Let's fix that. Great. And we're going to go into Scheme as an alternative language to what is commonly used in web development. We're going to go through both the server side and the client side and the recent development Sprightly's done around there. And then we'll conclude with like future direction and work left to be done. So let's talk about scale. In the web development industry, something that I worked in for about 10 years before coming to Sprightly, can I get a show of hands, like web developers in the room, or have done it at any point? Okay, quite a number of people. Industry focus, no surprise, is on scaling up. We read a lot of articles about, you know, going from zero users to millions and public clouds and load balancers and all these sorts of things. But my focus at Sprightly, and hopefully something that can, you know, a lot of people here can relate to, is on self-hostable web applications. Things that not only can maybe scale up, but scale down, importantly, things that can run on, you know, some hardware you just have hanging around, something that maybe only supports you or you and some friends, a small community. And we don't talk about this much. We don't talk about scaling down. So I really like to focus on it here and show how Scheme can be a language to affect such things. So let's cover the modern web development stack. I have a pretty pessimistic view of it. You know, one thing I hope everyone can agree on is JavaScript is essentially mandatory. On the front end, until recently, and I'll get into this, you didn't have much of a choice. JavaScript is involved in the stack at some point. Usually Node.js, maybe it runs your back end, maybe it's just for generating front end code. But more and more, not only are we dependent on JavaScript, we're dependent on languages that compile to JavaScript. So we have projects like Babel.js that are JavaScript compilers, and we have languages like TypeScript, you know, back in the day, CoffeeScript, other things. You know, more and more we're building languages on top of JavaScript to deal with the shortcomings of JavaScript. And I think Babel's really appropriately named because it really is becoming this like tower of Babel and complexity and just piles of languages. When it comes to the deployment, you usually need, you know, a combination of your systems package manager, pretty much always NPM. Anytime I look at a web application's Git repository, there's always a package.json file hanging out. And if you're not using Node for the backend, you need at least one other package manager. If you're using Python, probably pip. If you're using Ruby, Bundler. You know, if you got a Rust backend, it's Cargo, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, WebAssembly's come around, and now you have a whole additional tool chain. For that, the most popular of which is Emscripten. Let's focus on JavaScript for a moment. Here are my problems with NPM. Typically, the dependency graphs are just massive, even for trivial things. I mean, show of hands, who's heard of the leftpad NPM package? I mean, this is, yeah, okay. It's kind of an extreme example of how minuscule these packages get, and they get depended upon by a bunch of things, and now, you know, between like legitimate security issues, like typo squatting, these sorts of things, we have dependency graphs that are just impossible to understand. Sorry about that. And not only they're hard to understand, they're hard to understand by the people that work on things like Linux distributions. They're difficult to near impossible to actually, you know, pull in out of NPM and go somewhere else with them, which will be a problem I'll expand on a little bit. And having done DevOps for a number of years, language package managers, they complicate deployment. Like typically, I was used to needing at least three. They don't compose particularly well. You have to use additional DevOps tools, things, you know, like Puppet or Ansible or Chef or something like that to wrangle it all together and get something that you can actually, you know, push out and deploy to production. And because of all these different package managers and package ecosystems, you know, interoperating and not composing particularly well, you know, if you're under requirements to make sure for compliance reasons that you're keeping up with security updates and stuff, you quickly become dependent on like centralized infrastructure like GitHub and their Dependabot to understand your CVE exposure. So how bad could it be? Who's a Geeks user in this room? I'm gonna do a lot of these like hand signs. Okay, and how many of you were at Geeks Days? Some, okay. So the topic of using a forge for Geeks has come up, and particularly for Geo. And you know, how bad could this NPM thing be? Well, if you take a look at the packagelock.json file for Geo, which is kind of billed as a self-hostable Git forge, that file is nearly 16,000 lines long, encoding you know hundreds to potentially thousands of dependencies. That's a big lift when you try to think about taking things out of that ecosystem and actually packaging it for a distro like Geeks or something else. It's pretty bad, in my opinion. Let's talk about WebAssembly, not just JavaScript. I'm calling this title "Mscripten is for the crabs," for the Rust of the world. WebAssembly provides a path away from JavaScript. Like you could imagine reducing JavaScript dependence and implementing more in WebAssembly, deploying that. However, the most popular toolchain for this is Mscripten. It's based on the LLVM compiler toolchain, and that's the primary use case there is for your static languages. You know, compiling your Rust, C++, C's, or perhaps a VM or an interpreter for a dynamic language. But like, you know, the part of it that's implemented in C, you compile that and maybe run that in the browser. But what about dynamic memory managed memory languages? Excuse me. And particularly, what about WASMGC, the garbage collector extension that adds, you know, heap allocated types and things to WebAssembly? What about this? The Mscripten path doesn't really give you that. And I'm gonna stop with the bad in a minute, but just one more thing. you know, talk a lot about DevOps. DevOps is a full-time job. You know, if you want to pay me six figures USD to wrangle all of your package managers and keep your database servers running, great, that's awesome. But when we talk about applications that regular users are running or just a few people, maybe someone that's very tech savvy but just doesn't have a lot of time, this quickly becomes like burdensome and something you don't want to do. I certainly don't want to do it. I've done enough of that. You have to pay me to want to do these sorts of things. So we have an alternative. It's called user ops. It's a term that's been around. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's been around a little while. I believe coined by Deb Nicholson, currently at the Python Software Foundation. And the idea is kind of the inverse of DevOps. We're talking about minimal dependencies, minimal system requirements. Things that you can actually deploy from a system package manager. I think you can actually reasonably apt install something and start it up. And it's, I'm not talking Flatpak, I'm not talking Docker, like just package managers that users use on a regular basis, at least in the Linux world. And they can also just be maintained by those users who have limited free time and energy. There's not a lot of different daemons to set up and maintain, you know, Redis caches, PostgreSQL servers, these sorts of things. And as I tried to demonstrate with the Forgeo example, even apps that build themselves as self-hostable, in my opinion, are actually quite difficult to self-host. I don't self-host a Mastodon instance, for example. I use someone else's. These sorts of things. Oops. one more slide about this. You know, is it web scale, right? The industry's focus is on scaling up, not down. You know, they're focused on deploying to AWS, not the old laptop that's been collecting dust in your closet. You know, and as like an analogy, it's kind of like big agriculture uses like, you know, large tractors and combines and things to do their work versus, you know, in your home garden, you have, you know, a little hand shovel and maybe, you know, maybe a hoe. And I think the tools that have tried to make things easier, Docker, Flatpak, oh, just install this, take this Docker container and run it, take this Flatpak image and run it. I think they're insufficient because they're a layer of complexity on top of all of these things. They kind of hide what we've built, the Tower of Babel, and I think ultimately they reduce user agency because these things are typically artifacts that are produced by the developers of something, and they say, run this. I gave you the binary. Just run it. And I think it's important for at least those of us that are interested to, you know, in software freedom and these sorts of things to be able to, you know, inspect and build and run these things on our own machines with the dependencies that we've got from wherever else, anywhere we want. So all this is to say, maybe we need different tools. And spoiler alert, that tool is Scheme. I think. So no secret that I'm a little schemer here. So specifically, I want to talk about Guile as a particularly good schema implementation. So a lot of people here that I know use Geeks or raise their hands. I know a lot of people know Guile here. But Scheme is a fairly minimalist language, you know, few core syntax forms, relatively small. I mean, if you stick to standard Scheme, it's not much there. Guile adds a little bit in the form of standard library, but it's not huge. It's something that's readily available in Linux distributions. It has a good bootstrapping story. Guile's compiler is written in Scheme, but there's a path to, you don't need an already built version of Guile to compile it. There's an interpreter written in C, and so you can go from GCC to the interpreter. You know, there's this whole bootstrapping thing. I'm looking at Andy in the back. He's written blog posts about the whole process, and it's a wonderful thing. So it's a nice path to getting into a Linux distribution and just being a nice build system in general. It has relatively few dependencies. It's not the absolutely most minimal thing, but not a lot of dependencies. And in terms of web applications, it has some built-in web client, web server goodies, and there are more goodies available in third-party libraries. And the big thing is that, you know, Scheme on the server has been a thing for a very long time, but Scheme in the web browser is relatively new, and that's something that's now possible. And just so you know, that this talk is actually a Guile web application. And I'll just show you really quick. If you get here are my slides. If you remember the intro slide, there's just some Scheme code that's rendering these things. And that's the client side. And on the server, here's what's rendering the web page that's running and rendering HTML on the server to serve it. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about maybe a few examples of how you can do these things. You can do a lot with a little, with a minimalist language like Scheme. So one example I'm going to give is using SXML. S stands for S expression. So what we're used to, and with web development, a lot of us are string-based templating languages, and you put some funny-looking characters to kind of drop out of string mode and run some code, and whatever that string is gets put right back in, and you have this like big template. The problem with that, and I'm not going to talk too much about it, is that you become vulnerable to things like injection attacks. And if you're not careful about escaping your input, there's a link at the bottom if you screenshot it or whatever. It's a good article on this subject. But really what I want to focus on is with Lisp, you can get structural templating. So it's an actual data structure. It's not just something that makes a big string blob. And so this little backtick here, QuasiQuote, that's your new best friend. Lisp has a built-in templating language for it, and it's called QuasiQuote. You don't need to bring string templating language into this. It's already there. All you need is something that can take the tree and produce the HTML. Another nice thing is URI routing, common thing in web frameworks. And here is an example of Ruby on Rails, how you might do a GET request for showing like a post, I don't know, on a blog or something like that. Well, with not that much code, you can use Guile's pattern matcher, and you get a structural matcher. So on the left, you see like the post/ID, and that little colon thing means capture that part of the URI path and assign it to the variable ID, and post hash show is some string encoded way of, you know, the post class and the show method. Well, instead of having to write string parsers, you can just use what Guile already has. It has pattern matching. You can just take the URI, split it up, and take the method, and then just match on that, capture the ID component, and then, you know, this, you know, on the right's the equivalent Guile code. So, you know, you have a flexible DIY router, like pretty much right there. And years ago, I wrote Geeks Publish, at least the first implementation of it, and we just use that for doing the URI routing. No web framework necessary. You get a lot with a little. And just a quick example of third-party libraries. Guile WebSockets, a library I maintain, extends what Guile provides already for HTTP stuff to also do WebSocket. Don't worry about the code, but I just wanted to show you this is like a simple like echo server. You can just write that and connect to it from the browser, and it'll echo things back to you. Okay, well, let's get to the good stuff. Let's talk about Guile in the web browser. So, who has heard of Hoot before? Okay, great. A lot of people. So those that don't know, Hoot is a Scheme to WebAssembly compiler. It's how we get Guile onto the web. And it's a project developed by Sprightly in conjunction with contracting with Agalia and the wonderful Andy Wingo. Hi, Andy. It's not only a compiler, but it's a full-purpose WebAssembly toolchain. So if you have any interest in playing around with WebAssembly, either at the low level writing actual instructions, or perhaps bringing another language to the web, I'd like to offer up Hoot as an interesting place to start. It's an ahead of time whole program compiler for Scheme, and the idea is you take your whole program and you get someone like Andy to be like, okay, we got to do all these compiler optimizations in it, and it produces a relatively compact binary, you know, that you can ship over the web and use minimal bandwidth. So, which is why we take the whole compilation strategy, and Guile is the sole dependency for this thing. No npm, no mscripten. So what it provides is a way to kind of take an end run around this whole, you know, in my opinion, problematic npm ecosystem. And we do this at Sprightly. We can actually deploy to the web without having to rely on npm packages, which we think is really nice because we're big Geeks fans, and so we can just use stuff that's available in Geeks and have one package manager that for the entire build and deployment. And I don't know if Andy's going to get embarrassed by this quote, but it's one of my favorite things he's ever written. So Hoot is approximately Guile. The intent is that this is Guile compiled for the web in as honest of a way as we can, which means there's things like all the primitives, like delimited continuations and things like that. They're implemented in tail calls, of course. You can't have Scheme without tail calls. WebAssembly has tail calls. It's great. We can kind of reasonably deploy, you know, Scheme programs without many compromises. So I'm just going to say it. If Guile's web booty doesn't pack all the funk in its trunk, probably it's just junk. And who does it? So let's take a quick look at some more examples of client-side things. Server stuff is interesting, but it's the clients where it's at. So first, let's talk about fibers. Does anyone know the fibers library in Guile, Guile fibers? Okay, not so many. It's an asynchronous programming library, an implementation of communicating sequential processes. Basically. And first, I guess I should also ask, who's familiar with like async programming in JavaScript using promises, async await? Okay, much more people. Okay, so those of you that are familiar with it are used to having to color the functions that can use await with async. And when you want to suspend await on something, you use await. And, you know, I wrote this function called sleep, and it returns a promise. We can await on this. But the point is, Once you want to use this, any function that's intended to use await has to be marked async. It's hard to take an existing code base and just like do async, this new async thing with it. You have to go around and make changes to the code base. Well, there's no coloring necessary with fibers in Scheme, so this much smaller program over there is just using the fibers API from Hoot, which is an exact copy of the one you can get for the Guile VM, just implemented for the web. And you don't have to color the run function. It's just you can do a sleep and it'll suspend and resume once 3 seconds have passed. So I think that's kind of nice. It makes for like more pleasant async programming. So not only is it kind of a minimal thing, I think it's like a win in terms of like developer ergonomics. Who's used React or any kind of virtual DOM implementation, Vue, these sorts of things? Okay, so it's pretty common. I have like some criticisms of that kind of like way of doing front end, but it's common, so I just wanted to show it. You can actually do this pretty minimally with Hoot. We have a blog post here at the bottom. I know it's a long URL, don't worry about it, but we've shown, you know, you can take, we're showing, earlier I showed SXML rendered on the server. Well, you can do the same thing on the client. Take an SXML tree, use the DOM API, render the tree, in response to a user event, generate a new tree of what the current state is, diff the two things, and then again use the DOM API to render those changes, just like React does. And so we can do it from Scheme, and we get the benefit of, we don't need like JSX or some like additional language to write the templates. It's all just pure Scheme code, and there we go. Is that the 10 minute?
No, you've got 5 more minutes.
Okay, great.